So we will begin our evening session first with His Holiness Dhanudhara Swami Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
So I also spoke this morning on Srila Prabhupada at the Bhaktivedanta Ashram, and I want to share some of those realizations, but I thought also I should say something a little bit different. And I wanted to share something about the speciality of celebrating Srila Prabhupada's disappearance festival here, even though he passed away in Vrindavan. And I'll demonstrate that speciality by a story. And I was actually there. And in Srila Prabhupada's last days, manifest with us, very, very much towards the end, he said, I want to go to Govardhan. I want to go to Govardhan. And I remember Lokanath Swami and Trivikram Swami immediately went out to get a bullock cart. And he wanted to go by bullock cart. And then the Kaviraj, the Ayurvedic doctor, he told some of his disciples that this would be tantamount, this would be like suicide. And then there was an argument between two parties. One party said, no, it's the order of the spiritual master. Another one, in a very spontaneous way, said, no, Prabhupada, we won't allow you to do this. And Prabhupada didn't go. But I think what was significant about that was his desire to go. And Prabhupada rarely expressed such an intimate spiritual desire publicly. That's very intimate. At the very end of his life, he wanted to go to Govardhan. And I kind of always try to think about why. And one day we were celebrating in the ashram down there, and I was coming in, and I saw a very saintly Mother Srimati from Vrindavan. And I was surprised, because she came all the way from Vrindavan to here to celebrate the disappearance festival. And I asked her, well, what are you doing here? I said, Prabhupada, you know, left the world in Vrindavan. And then she said, but he eternally resides here. And then when she said that, I thought, yes, that was his desire. And then I remember reading in the, and one thing that confirmed it, I was reading in the Bhagavatam, the story of Putana, and a very interesting point came out in that story of Putana. Is, you know, externally, she was a very beautiful woman, a nursemaid, but internally there was something different, which was kind of a witch. And at the very end of her life, when Krishna killed her, that nature came out. So the point was made that at the very end of life, when one is dying, one lets go of his defenses and one sincerely can express their real heart. So I immediately thought, yes, at the very end of his life, Prabhupada was always very, very careful. Prabhupada was always very, very careful about expressing intimate things, but at the very end of his life, he was in his room and he said, I want to go to Govardhan. Take me to Govardhan. So I think that's a very special spiritual connection for Prabhupada. And from that, I think we can not conclude, but make a safe bet that actually Prabhupada eternally resides here. And just as my mind is going towards the last days of Prabhupada in Vrindavan, very, very amazing is that, you know, he was very, very ill and actually in a lot of pain because he couldn't, he would only take, they would measure what he would take, pomegranate juice in just millimeters. And one day I was in his room. One day, my godbrother, Bibi Govindaswamy, because, you know, we were serving from, our service started at 4:30 in the morning and it ended at 8:30. Now, when did we have time to see Prabhupada? Although Prabhupada was so merciful towards the end, you see, initially when you had to see Prabhupada, you had to go through a little room where his secretary was there. So you couldn't see him very, but at the end, Prabhupada just opened up the door of his house to everyone 24 hours a day. Anytime you wanted, at any time of the night or day, you could go into Prabhupada's room. So Bibi Govindaswamy actually told me, and he said, why don't you come early? So I would come early to chant my rounds early in the morning, and there'd be no one there. And one day I was just there with Bhavananda Swami at the time, and Prabhupada was actually, you can see he was in pain. You'd hear, Krishna, Krishna. And then Bhavananda asked me to help him take Prabhupada's body and resituate himself on the bed. But you can imagine, and this really shows what real bhakti is. Real bhakti is not just the mind or the intelligence. It's being enthused with a special energy of love for Krishna that goes beyond the mind and body. So you can see, despite that condition, Prabhupada was on his back in pain. And you know, even in yoga, when you want to meditate, why do you do asana? It says sukha and sthira. You got to keep the body steady and happy. If the body is not steady and happy, you can't meditate. Your mind will go into the body. You know, you'll chant, you'll twist your head and twist your body, and you won't be able to meditate. So what to speak when you're in such a condition? And what to speak of chanting japa, translating the Bhagavatam. I remember we would stay in the ISKCON guest house, and when I would wake up in the morning, we would look out into Prabhupada's porch at maybe 2 in the morning, and Prabhupada was sitting, and he had this 10 or 12 commentaries of the Bhagavatam, and he was reading them in Sanskrit, and after reading them in Sanskrit, in his mind, he was composing the commentaries, and then he would speak them. This is practically unheard of. Anybody knows when you write and you rewrite, and you take something out, you put something in. There was a famous writer, Oscar Wilde. He said, I spent the whole morning putting in one comma, And I spent the whole afternoon taking it out. So writing is so extreme. But Prabhupada was just in his mind. And then he would speak the purports. And in the... So he was on his bed in pain. And they were reading the commentaries to him. And when he was lying on his back, he was dictating the purports. This is transcendental. This is another energy. And in fact, recently, I was giving a seminar on that last chapter that Prabhupada wrote, Brahma Vimohan Lila, which is also very interesting, just in a way, that finishes the Kumar Lila. Krishna's 1-5, he finishes that. And they are his most deep and lucid purports. In fact, this morning I was asking a question. I can see if any of the pundits here know. What was the last sentence that Srila Prabhupada ever wrote in his purports? And I was just, I'll paraphrase it. I don't know word for word. But it's so significant, it'll give you the essence of Krishna consciousness. And then he said, then, this is after Brahma became humbled, which is a very wonderful story. And he became humbled. He was Lord Brahma, the creator of this world, the engineer of this world, and his head was on the floor, bowing to Krishna. Very happy in that position. His tears were bathing the lotus feet of Krishna. And then the last sentence was, and then he prayed with humility, with humility, respect, and attention. So those are three kind of key aspects to spiritual life: respect, humility, and attention. And I also remember when Prabhupada came back to Vrindavan for the last time, and he came from Mumbai by train. They picked him up. We're waiting by the guest house door, the guest house gate. Prabhupada was in the arms of Brahmananda Prabhu, like Haridas Thakur in the arms of Lord Chaitanya. It could have been exactly like that. And before Prabhupada came into the room, he folded his hands. He folded his hands and he looked at us very, very humbly, and he quoted from King Kulashekar, Krishna Twadiya Parapankaja Pankarajam Adyeva Me Vishatume Manasaraja Hamsa. Prabhupada prayed. He said, let me die now when the swan of my mind is entangled with the lotus of your feet. Otherwise, at the time of death, when you are choked up with mucus, and then how will I remember you with such humility? Now, there'll be other speakers, so I'll just finish up now with just one story that I heard recently, and it's always wonderful to hear a new Srila Prabhupada story that you never heard. And probably no one here has heard this story either. But I'm going to tell this story and then ask you in your mind, what are the qualities of Prabhupada that it demonstrates? And then I'll say a few. and then we can end for today. But this was told by a god brother who was at 26 Second Avenue. Name is Nayana Barampuru, and he visited me and we took lunch. And then he started talking about 26 Second Avenue. And so he came, and there was a friend of his who's also joined. She was a lady, and she hated men. She absolutely hated men. But somehow she joined Krishna consciousness, and she took initiation, and they were worshiping for a while. And then after a while, she was disturbed, and she had to see Prabhupada. And she went to Prabhupada, and she said, Prabhupada, she said, you know, I just can't stand worshiping that man, Krishna. And then Prabhupada said, that's okay, Radharani's higher. So, what quality in Prabhupada do you think that illustrates? Of course, Prabhupada had a good answer for everything. I know one time he was on stage and he gave a very heavy lecture about first-class men, Brahmins. And he kept, first, we need first-class men. We need, and someone, it was in the West, and someone raised their hand and said, hey, Swamiji, what class of man are you? He said, I am fifth-class man. I serve the other four classes. So Prabhupada, someone said, you're Guru Srila Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, yes. Guru knows everything? Yes. Then how many windows in the Empire State Building? Prabhupada said, how many drops of water in a mirage? So Prabhupada had the right answers. But besides that, and I'll leave this as just like a message of Prabhupada we can dwell on, that Prabhupada was encouraging to people. He was empowering. And after lunch today, some of us were discussing this, how Prabhupada, and I think I want to give a definition of empowerment that I think Prabhupada exemplified. And I think empowerment means that you see and can recognize the good in someone, the qualities that one has, you will encourage it, and you will facilitate it. So I think we can take this message from Prabhupada, how somehow or other he found a way to encourage everybody in devotional service, and we should think of the people that we have relationships with and see what qualities in them we can encourage and facilitate in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you very much, His Holiness Dharmaswami Maharaj. So now we will request Her Grace Mandakini Mataji to kindly come forward and make her offering.
I'm so thankful and happy to be amongst all of you once again by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and my exalted God brothers and spiritual family. So Maharaj has asked me to tell again the story of Russia, and I told him, but Maharaj, it's exactly the same story. And he laughed and he said, don't change a word. So I will try with his blessing. But before that, I wanted to add something to what Danudar Swami told us about Srila Prabhupada books. To take you back to London in Bury Place in the year 70, when Srila Prabhupada at night was translating Srimad Bhagavatam. Then the devotee who was guarding the door allowed us to look through the keyhole, and we were taking turns and looking through the keyhole, seeing Srila Prabhupada talking to the dictaphone, and it was really so intimate and beautiful. And one devotee who was distributing books was with Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada asked him, "Do you actually read my books?" The devotee said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada, I read your books, but I don't have that much time." So Srila Prabhupada says, "Oh, you should read my books." Then he told him, "Do you know why?" He went on and said, "Because myself, I'm reading my books." Srila Prabhupada again said, "Do you know why?" And then he added, "Because actually I'm not writing these books. Krishna is telling me what to write. And when I read my books, I get realizations." So now let us go back to England, year 71. Then I joined Krishna Consciousness 2 years ago. As you can hear, I come from France. I joined with two friends. We were looking for spiritual life and trying to find the spiritual master. And by Krishna's grace, we met a devotee in Paris who told us to come to the temple. Srila Prabhupada was opening a temple in England, in a Bury place near the British Museum. So we came one day, and that was actually the day the deities were installed, Shishi Radha Landini Shra. And we all know how much Srila Prabhupada loved Shishri Radhananda Nishvara. He actually kidnapped them. And I think you all know the story. He was very, very determined, and he knew Radhananda Nishvara were coming. The date was fixed for the opening of the temple, and no deities were there. But he kidnapped them, and they came. So we came that day, and I remember with my friend, who became later Jyotirmayi, Devidasi, we sat in the temple. It was a very beautiful mystical temple built by our dear Shyamasundar Prabhu. It looked like a mystic Buddhist cave, and incense, a lot of incense, and beautiful kirtan. Yamuna Devi was singing. And all of a sudden, the devotee started to bow down. And we never did that in our life, but being very polite young girls, we did the same. And I was very curious. So I looked up a little bit, and I saw two beautiful golden feet passing near my head. And I wanted to see to whom these feet belonged to. And then, for the first time, I saw Srila Prabhupada. And what I remembered, and many devotees had the same impression, he was so dignified, like the emperor of the world. And at the same time, he was the most humble person I ever seen. So it was the first encounter with Srila Prabhupada. He stayed 1 week at this time, and this week was crucial for my friend and I, and at the end Srila Prabhupada convinced us that he was our real spiritual master, because we were so foolish. We came to Bury Place to test Srila Prabhupada, and every night we were talking in French to each other, so nobody else would understand, and we were asking each other, "Do you think he's our real spiritual master?" And he really, a lot of mystical things happened, and we got convinced. So Bury Place Temple was a wonderful temple, like a a family atmosphere and very creative, bright, intelligent devotees who always came up with wonderful ideas. There was Shyama Sundar Prabhu and Malati, Jamuna and Gurudas Prabhu, and Mukunda and Janaki Prabhus. But at one point, Srila Prabhupada called two couples to join his world Sankirtan tour in India. So dear Jamuna trained me to become a pujari, and then I stayed in London, and life was sublime with Sri Sri Radhanandanishvara, because as Srila Prabhupada said, actually Krishna has cheated you. He didn't come as a murti, he came in himself. And that was, I can testify, it was true. So life was going on, and a desire to help the preaching mission was coming up in my heart. And one day, I read in one of Srila Prabhupada's purports, if the spiritual master is asking you to do a task, maybe a little difficult, a little challenging, and if you say yes, then you will make a lot of spiritual progress in your spiritual life. I became very enthusiastic, and I ran to Sri Sri Radhanandanishvara, who, remember, has come as Krishna had come himself. So I said, please, please, my Lord, please can you help me, that Srila Prabhupada will ask me to do something a little difficult, a little challenging, but please, please, help me to remember to say yes. And then I forgot about it. And by this time, we heard that Srila Prabhupada was in Moscow. And we thought it was quite extraordinary, because at this time, it was extremely difficult to go to Moscow. And it was beyond what we called the Iron Curtain. Actually, Shyama Sundar told us he had arranged a visa for Srila Prabhupada to meet Professor Katovsky, who was the head of the Asian Department Studies. And he told us he didn't actually have an invitation. He told Professor Katovsky that S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami would like to visit you. And Professor Katovsky said, yes, it would be very nice, but it wasn't a proper invitation. But Shyama Sundar Prabhu used it to get the visa. And when Professor Katovsky heard that Srila Prabhupada was coming, he was pretty much afraid. So when Prabhupada came, I have to add something that Malati Prabhu told me. No books were allowed. But Malati always had the habit to do things when she thought it was good, didn't obey, and it was extremely good, actually. She put in Shyama Sundar a Bhagavad Gita. And when Shyama Sundar and Srila Prabhupada came through the border, the officer of immigration just dropped the suitcase, and the suitcase opened, and the Bhagavad Gita was there on the floor. And Shyama Sundar's face went white. But the officer was so frightened, so embarrassed to have made this mistake of dropping the suitcase, that he didn't pay attention to the Bhagavad Gita. And so Malati Prabhu actually introduced the first book, the Bhagavad Gita, to Russia. And in this time, there was absolutely no printing press, even hidden. So what happened The people in Russia who were looking for spiritual life were so sincere that at night they were actually writing by hand the Bhagavad Gita. And as soon as they finished writing, it was going to someone else, and so on. So by that time, we just knew that Srila Prabhupada was in Russia, and I thought he was so, so brave. And I thought, oh, he's so brave, it's a country I will never go, probably. And then when Srila Prabhupada was talking to Professor Katovsky, he talked about Vanashram Dharma, he convinced him that even a communist country like Russia cannot have a society without class. And he talked about the Vanashram Dharma. And at the end, he asked, can I see the students? And Professor Katovsky said, no students here today. Then he says, can I see the teachers? Oh, no, no teachers are there. There was not even a cleaner, because Professor Katovsky was so frightened to get in trouble. So Prabhupada was actually very, very sad not to meet the youth. And days were passing by. He only stayed 5 days. And Shyamasundar Prabhu could see how Srila Prabhupada was disappointed, and he started praying, please make Srila Prabhupada meet someone. So one day he went to the grocery shop in a dhoti, and this young man approached him, asking, are you coming from India? Malati said he didn't only say this, he also asked him, do you have any jeans to buy? Any watch, anything, you know? And Shyamasundar said, no, I'm not coming from India, but my spiritual master is coming from India. Would you like to meet him? He's in a hotel room. And the boy said, yes, yes, I'm very much interested. He was actually studying in university philosophy, and he had an Indian friend called Madhukar. So that's how Srila Prabhupada met the first devotee. For the Russian devotees, your first hero. And his name at the time was Anatoly. So Shyamasundar also said he never saw Srila Prabhupada putting so much energy preaching to one person. Again, he talked about Vanashram Dharma and everything in Bhagavad Gita. Anatoly asked him, Should I become a pope to preach, a Russian Orthodox pope to preach Krishna consciousness? Srila Prabhupada said, it's not necessary. And then the boy said, actually, it would be good if I could have a Western wife. Maybe he felt he would be more protected like that. So we didn't know all of this. But we heard of Prabhupada being in Russia, and we felt it was so extraordinary. And then, as usual, while traveling, Prabhupada came back to the Bury Place temple. He came quite often, and it was always a treat to have him with us. So I was still doing pujari worship. I was still doing deity worship. And doing some little services for Srila Prabhupada, like cooking his fruit offering or his sweets, washing his clothes and ironing them and bringing it to them. And one day I heard, Srila Prabhupada wants to see you, Mandakini. So I was quite a little worried. Maybe I made some mistakes. And I went up, I knocked on the door, and I heard Srila Prabhupada's voice saying, come in. So I came in, and that room was absolutely beautiful. The colors of the room were peach and blue, and Prabhupada liked it very much because it was actually the color of his room when he was a child. He was sitting, Shyamasundara was on his left. And he said, "Come closer." So did I. And I have to tell you that Srila Prabhupada was often joking, you know. Like I was a young girl in my 20s, and at that time I didn't want to get married. So Srila Prabhupada always used to joke, "Oh, Mandakini, you didn't find a husband yet," or meaning you didn't find anybody good enough for you, and teasing. And then I came and he said, "Mandakini, would you like to go to Russia and to marry this boy, Anatoly, and by the grace of the Lord, help to spread the mission of Lord Chaitanya there?" And all of a sudden I remembered my prayers. And by Radhanandanishwara's grace, and I told him, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." And his smile became very, very big. So that was actually Srila Prabhupada's incredible mercy. I don't want to speak too long because I have so many other exalted God brothers, but I can tell you the first time I actually came to Russia, Shyamasundara Prabhu told me, "Don't take any beads, don't take anything. I just took a necklace to chant." And I had to dress for the first time in 2 years in civil clothes, because at the time we never dressed with a skirt or trousers. We were always wearing saris or dhotis for the Prabhus. And I joined a tourist group. The idea was that I was supposed to go every night to see the Bolshoi ballet dancers. So I came, and the key message was to be very unnoticed, to be very discreet, because our guide will report to KGB. KGB at the time was the Russian secret police. So when we came to the hotel, first we went through the big streets of Moscow, and for those of you who are from Russia or had been to Moscow, now it's very colorful and joyful. It looks almost like every city in the world, but at the time it looked black and white. Actually, people were very sad, and it was very heavy atmosphere. And it was like there was no color. In my remembrance, I don't see any color. No cars, maybe two or three in the very, very big Stalinian avenues. The architecture was also Stalinian architecture, very severe and wanted to look grand, but very sad. So we came in the hotel, and the lady who was our guide asked, "What would you like?" She asked the group, "What would you like for dinner?" So she gave us different choices. First, she mentioned some meat, and some people said yes. Then she said, "Okay, the others, you can have fish." So they said yes. And by the end, I was the only one. I didn't make any choice. And everybody started looking at me. And I had to say, "Actually, I'm sorry, but I'm a vegetarian." And then I thought I blew everything. I'm discovered already. I didn't start, you know. I didn't do anything for Srila Prabhupada. Then I went up the stairs of that hotel, And there was a tall young man waiting near my door, and he looked quite stern, and he asked, my civil name was Monique. So he says, "Are you Monique?" I thought, "Oh, Krishna, he's KGB. I didn't start, and it's already finished." And then, and then he said, "I'm an Anatoly." So I said, "Oh, Haribo, Prabhu, Haribo." And at the time, although I thought I was very liberal in mind, I was quite fanatical. So the first thing I asked him was, "Are you following the four regulative principles?" And he had only met Srila Prabhupada for, I think, two or three days, no more. So I started telling the regulative principles, asking him, you don't eat meat, fish or egg, don't you? And he says, "Most of the time, I don't." So then I went on asking about gambling, and it was always an intoxicant, and it was always the same thing. "No, most of the time I avoid." So I thought, "Oh Krishna, what am I going to do?" Then he said, let's go down. Somebody is waiting for us." And then he introduced me to one of the most beautiful Russian girls. He says, "She's my cousin, Svetlana, but she didn't look exactly like his cousin." So I didn't ask about the fourth regulative principle. And then we started, he took me with his friend Madhukar to some very beautiful sceneries in Moscow, and like a boy will do in a romantic way, but I was feeling very frustrated and impatient, and I told him, "But Prabhu, can we meet some people? You know, we don't have much time." Although now I would love to see beautiful sceneries, but at the time we were not used to it. You know, it was very intense. And then he started inviting his friends in the little flat he was sharing with his mother. So we started to talk to the friend. He was translating into English. We spoke English, actually. And we had only the Bhagavad Gita that Malati put in the suitcase. And it was so wonderful because I remember people were so eager. They were ready to give their life, to go to the camp or to prisons, to learn about spiritual life. So it was such a wonderful experience. And Krishna was really helping. Like, for example, when some questions came, sometimes the questions were a little difficult. And Lord Krishna and Srila Prabhupada put the right verse of Bhagavad Gita in my mind so I could reply properly. So I went a few times like that. And Prabhupada's idea was for me to get a residential visa and to marry Anatoly and to stay there to help. But somehow or other, the Russian authority knew already that we wanted to introduce Krishna consciousness, and they never gave me that kind of visa. One time, Shyamasundar asked me to bring the first volumes that just got printed again of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He told me, "Mandakini, they are hot from the press. You bring them." So I said, "Yes, Prabhu." I took them and I thought, "Okay, I'll go by train. Maybe it will be easier at the border." And it was going quite slow. It took us about 3 days to go to Moscow. One lady, a French lady, came, and she told me, "By the way, I hope you don't have any religious books, because, you know, they get really mad about religious books." So I looked at her and I said, "No, it's okay." You know, but I started wondering, what can I do with the books, you know, to get them to Moscow? So she told me, "You cannot hide them, because they will look everywhere, in your suitcase, in the beds, under the beds, everywhere." So then I thought, "My dear Lord Krishna, you really want these books to go to Moscow. So now I feel completely stupid and useless, but you are so intelligent. You can do everything happen. So please find a way so that this Srimad Bhagavatam will come to Moscow." But the train was going on, and nothing was happening. And all of a sudden, I saw an Indian man coming in the corridor of the train, and his wife was there. So I thought, maybe it will not look so strange if it's in the suitcase of an Indian gentleman. So I went to him and his wife and started some small talks. Then he asked, "Do you know anybody in Moscow? What are you going to do there?" I told him, "Yes, I have some friends, a Russian friend and an Indian friend." He says, "Oh, really? So what is your friend's name?" So I told him his name, Madhukar Tandon, and he opened his eyes very big, and he said, "Oh, he's actually the son of my boss." And I remembered that Madhukar's father was actually a very high Indian diplomat at the Indian embassy. So I became very, very happy and excited and thought, "Thank you, Krishna, you did it." Then I looked at the man and said, "Maybe you can help me. You know, the militians, they are really mad at some philosophical or religious books. Could you kindly put the Srimad Bhagavatam in your diplomatic suitcase?" And he says, "Oh yes, with great pleasure." And he said, I'll give them to my son, and I'll give them to my boss, and he will give them to his son." So then I became so ecstatic. I gave him the Srimad Bhagavatam. He opened his diplomatic suitcase, he turned the key, and here it was. The Srimad Bhagavatam were safe. And when the militians came, they looked really mean. They looked everywhere. They looked under the bed, in the suitcase, everywhere. And as I remembered, I tried not to smile. I tried to keep a straight face. But I thought, "Oh, Krishna, you have tricked them. They cannot do anything. The Srimad Bhagavatam is going to Moscow." And I thought of that beautiful verse. I won't quote the exact words, but the meaning was, when Lord Krishna left the planet, he came as this literary incarnation, the Bhagavad Purana. And that Bhagavad Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam, is more brilliant than thousands of suns, and it will illuminate the darkness of ignorance. And as Moscow and Russia looked so grey, I thought it's going to put colors in the streets of Moscow. Thanks to Srila Prabhupada's desire and to Lord Krishna. So I will end very soon now, but just to say that I married legally Anatoly, who became Ananta Shanti. But unfortunately, after 5-6 years, going every year 2 or 3 times, I just couldn't get the residential permit, so Srila Prabhupada said, "Maybe it's no use to carry on." So I went on to do different service. And then the preaching went on so wild and so beautifully. But it's another saga, another story. But we have here so many wonderful Russian devotees. And Srila Prabhupada's dream came true. He fulfilled the desire of Srila Bhaktivinoda that in the street of Mayapur Dham, on the roads, it will be in the future devotees from all over the world, not only from India, like we see here, so wonderful devotees from India, the highest brains from India, who have taken shelter of His Holiness Radhanath Swami and are doing so many wonderful service. They teach us how to serve, actually. And when we see them, we want to serve. And devotees from Russia, from England, from Germany, from France, from America. So Srila Prabhupada has fulfilled the mission his Guru Maharaj gave him, and I think even much more. You know, he has done even much more than his Guru Maharaj asked him. So thank you very much. And I pray on this very holy day to be able to be of some use, of some menial service to all of you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Thank you, Mandakini Mataji. Now we would like to request His Holiness Srila Sachinandan Swami Maharaj to come forward and please make his offering.
It is very nice to see all of you in such a good size assembly. We are hearing up to Govardhan, where you are. We heard when you were in Varshana singing, it came all the way to Govardhan. Not your sound, but the news of your sound. And thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to address you today. I would like to speak about a certain perspective of Srila Prabhupada, an individual perspective. And then I would like to discuss just very briefly how each one of us can connect with Srila Prabhupada and have like a life connection with him. So, first of all, I can imagine that except for my exalted God brothers and God sisters who had personal association with Srila Prabhupada, all of you will be asking themselves the question, well, how was he? How did he affect people who met him? What was he like? And you will like to piece all the informations together so that your picture of the founder Acharya, who is very much influencing your own lives through his teachings, comes together as a complete impression. In order to help us understand a little bit of Srila Prabhupada's personality And how it was when one was in his presence and, so to say, felt his influence upon one's heart. In order to illustrate this, I would like to talk to you this evening of two personal encounters which I had with Srila Prabhupada. But before doing this, I want to thank our previous speaker, my god sister Mandakini, for sharing this very personal story, how Prabhupada gave her just what she prayed for, a little challenging, let us say, order to marry a man she had never seen before and to help spread the mission of Krishna consciousness in an atmosphere or country which was very, very hostile against it. I think this example of full surrender to Prabhupada has really given us a little answer how Prabhupada affected the life of the people who came in contact with him. When you were with Srila Prabhupada, you just wanted to do what he wanted you to do because you had absolute faith that that was the best thing you could do. It was better than any own plan which you would make in your own creative mind. That faith was there. So thank you very much, Mandakini. It is really very inspiring, and I will today think before I go to bed about full surrender to Srila Prabhupada, following your example. It was very endearing. Thank you very much. And the way you discussed it, woo. Hare Krishna. His Holiness Radhanand Maharaj told me this morning, "Have you heard the story?" I said, "No, what story?" And he said, "It will be the best thing you have ever heard." And his promise, yes, it came very close to the truth. So, when I got the first pamphlet of Srila Prabhupada, it was called The Peace Formula. I was young, arrogant and foolish. I could not understand really the logic in his writing because I was too much covered by my own political ideas how to make peace in the world. But I was intrigued and I decided I would try to meet Srila Prabhupada and test him. Yes, just like Mandakini, I had this European ego. I would not accept anything as valid which I had not tested and which had not passed my test. You know, we Europeans are known to be a little foolish, so that was there. I had read some of his writings, first the pamphlet and then the Bhagavad Gita in English, some of it, but I felt intrigued, but I wanted to test him. Is there really a personality who can live by the exalted teachings of the Bhagavad Gita and be that saint which is described in the 12th canto, 12th chapter you know, not disturbed and good and bad, compassionate and equal-minded to all, and so on. And I thought, if he really is that saint, maybe I will become his disciple. So I left the school earlier and came with the devotees to London. At that time, I did not want to pay money to go by ship to London, because I felt it's a spiritual adventure and money can't help me here. So I smuggled myself into the boat and went to the over the seas. I became seasick inside the boat, and then I hoped to meet Prabhupada, but Prabhupada was upheld in America, because there were more and more Ratha Yatras, and he went to all of them, and he came to London much later. He came when my school summer holidays were already over. So I thought, summer holidays are coming to the end. I have to appear in school, but I have not yet met Srila Prabhupada. I only met his disciples. I have not yet been able to meet that saintly person I had heard about. And my secret hope was, I have not yet been convinced by him. Maybe when I meet him, I convince him. So I did not go to school. In Germany, I became one of the most hunted persons because of the family background I had. Was, where is he? Where is he? He's not appearing in school. And people came to try to convince me, you know, there is a trouble cooking in Germany, you are not coming. I said, I won't come to school. I first meet Prabhupada. Don't tell anyone about my hiding place. So, yes. Finally, Prabhupada came from America. I remember his plane landed around midnight in the Heathrow Airport, and we all came, all the London temple came there to greet him. I remember the devotees were sleeping, some were sleeping on the floor, some were sleeping on the couches, in a very free and culturally very unusual way. They took the whole airport and did their midnight ragas, their snoring. I was very surprised by these people. All of a sudden, I was asleep, falling asleep. A devotee blew the conch shell, waking up everyone else and shouting, Prabhupada is coming. So we all went to the place where we expected him to come. Now, as we were before the sliding doors, you know, they go up and then they close. I remember they were made with, here comes a difficult word, milk glass. It's glass you can't see through because it's a little whitish. So I noticed behind these doors a light was walking. I thought, what is this walking light? Then, all of a sudden, the sliding doors opened. And I knew from where this light was. It was from Prabhupada's effulgent personality. And now my father was involved. No need. Please listen carefully. My father was in the war, in the Second World War, and he told us about lethal weapons. And I immediately thought, oh no, this light is so brilliant. If I continue to look into it, I will lose my eyesight. And then I remembered this quotation from the Bible, how Moses saw God in form of a light, which a fire which burned on a bush, thorn bush, but didn't exactly burn the thorn bush, but it was a blinding light. So I thought, it's either a lethal weapon or it's a divine light. And I just jumped on the floor in order to protect my life from this light. Yes, I was very foolish. I still am, but then I was super foolish. So I didn't pay obeisances. No. I saved my eyes. And so I waited when it would be a safe time to get up, calculating when Prabhupada might have passed me. So I waited, and after some time, I came up and I saw right before me two small house slippers. I immediately identified the brand. It was Romika, a German brand. And my first thought was, who in the world has the nerve to go on an international airport in these house shoes? The German word is Hauspuschen. I think you can understand. It's a very relaxed style of dressing, which is not expected for international travel. So I carefully looked up who was that person standing before me. Then the next thing is I saw Saffron Dhoti. And then I looked into the shiny face of Srila Prabhupada, who seemed to say with his eyes, "Welcome." Something like, "Welcome back." And this communication was so dear that as I think about it, goose pimples come over my back. Yes, Prabhupada welcomed a lost soul into his fold, into his following. And I immediately understood it like this. And he had spoken to me in a language which I had demanded, a language of proof. He had shown a mystical light around him, which illuminated the whole airport, and which, as he stood before me, illumined my dark heart. I believe Mandakini Mataji has said that many Prabhupada disciples have similar experiences upon the first meeting. And we studied the available literature, and many devotees have described that they saw this brilliant light around Srila Prabhupada, which was not only destroying the outer darkness, or was not vanquishing the outer darkness, but much more important, a light which destroyed the inner doubts and the inner resistance against Krishna, the inner darkness, if you so wish. The second personal encounter with Srila Prabhupada was when he visited Germany and preached there. He stayed for 2 weeks, and he met many dignitaries of the German society. He gave several public programs. In one program, he convinced my material father, my physical father, blood father. My father was very angry at Srila Prabhupada because his middle son and his oldest son had joined the movement, but he didn't want his sons to be Indian beggars, as he told us. He wanted them to be CEOs or whatever. So he was very angry on the personality who had stolen his sons away from him. And he challenged Prabhupada in a public program. He said, "Your movement will not survive in Germany. How can you bring a crocodile from the Nile?" Nile is a river in Africa, in Egypt. How can you bring a crocodile into a German river and hope it will survive? It will die after 1 or 2 days. So you have brought a movement which is destined to be annihilated, and you have pulled my two sons into this movement. Prabhupada asked one of his assistants, and one servant said, "Sachinandan and Vaidyanath's father." So Prabhupada didn't throw the super atom bomb, because he would not tolerate any challenge to Krishna consciousness, especially not in public. You would see Prabhupada really defending his Lord, and he would always win. But he was a challenge. So he said only one sentence to my father, which my father keeps repeating to this day. He said, "You," meaning Mr. Peterson, "you can become Krishna conscious in suit and tie." With this answer, he said, "This movement is not about a specific culture which may not be adoptable in another part of the world." This movement, he was indicating, is the movement of the living entities, you know. A movement which answers the archetypical quest or the search of the soul for the Lord. So my father, Prabhupada looked at him if he had another argument, but my father sat down and remained silent. He could understand, and he accepted his defeat and is very favorable to Krishna consciousness afterwards. One sentence, one glance, and he changed a life. The last episode is when, during this time, Satswarup Maharaj would massage Srila Prabhupada every morning with mustard seed oil. But one day he got a fever, and when he took his hand to touch Prabhupada for the massage, Prabhupada noticed the heat in his body and said, "You have a fever. You go to rest. Get another person to massage." So Satswarup Maharaj came out looking for someone who could take his place. And I happened to be before the door of Srila Prabhupada's little apartment in our castle. This was a temple, the Schloss Rettershof castle, a nice castle which was transformed into a temple. And when I heard what Satswarup Maharaj said, I knew Shivananda Prabhu knows to massage. So we tried to find him, but he was out doing some purchase on the market. And then Satswarup Maharaj turned to me and said, "Do you know to massage?" And I said, "I'm the best masseur in the universe." Although I had no knowledge of massage. But I saw this is my chance to be close. So I came in, a little bold still. But then Prabhupada looked at me, and when he looked at me with this questioning eyes, I began to first become reddish. This is a privilege which I think doesn't happen to all of you because you have a different complexion. So I became red like a tomato, and I began to perspire profusely so that my whole shirt became wet. And Prabhupada looked at me with a very deep voice, said, "Just do your service." So I went, and Satsvarup Maharaj had told me we should start with the back, and he said, "You should do it very hard." So Prabhupada was leaning, I put my oil on the head, and I went from his gamsha, where his gamsha ended, up the back to its shoulder. Prabhupada said, "Harder." 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 I was leaning with my entire, I changed the angle, you know. But it was not hard enough. Then Prabhupada asked in a frustrated tone that I couldn't do it hard enough, "What do you do for service?" Indicating you are very weak. I said, "Prabhupada, I'm trying to translate your books from English to German." Immediately he became very pleased. This you need to know. Prabhupada wanted his books to be translated in all languages and be spread and distributed all over. And his whole demeanor became very, very, he changed, and I almost felt a collegial mood, but maybe that was my wishful imagination. But he was very kind. "Oh," he said, "how many pages a day?" So I said, 17, which was my best number. And Srila Prabhupada immediately caught me again. He always catches everyone when they lie. And Prabhupada said, "Really?" And I said, "Prabhupada, this was once in my best day." So he had that, really, he had that eyes and the way he could read everything. No use to try to make a show or anything. So then he said something very nice. He said, "You know, as a devotee should be four things. And please listen, and those of you who are accustomed to take notes, this is a good time. He should be a good disciple. The second, he should be a guru, a teacher. He should be a water carrier. And he should be a cook. The first two instructions are obvious. One should receive the knowledge and one should preach the knowledge. The third, water carrier, I have studied a little bit Indian literature and I know the water carrier is someone who goes when the village suffers from drought and he brings water from a distant place and gives this water, the water of life, to those who are in need. I understood it as preaching the eternal life-giving message of Krishna consciousness. And to be a cook is, you should be self-sufficient, not dependent, overly dependent on others. And so these four instructions he gave to me, and I'm trying to live my life, although I have a great difficulty with this, to be a cook, because I have two left hands. I'm not good in cooking, and I am run away of I have a traumatic relationship to cooking, but I'm trying. So then the last thing of this, the last episode, so I massaged his entire body, then he asked me to crack the fingers like this, and I tried, but then I couldn't try again, and Prabhupada said, pull the fingers, and I said, no. And he said, why not? My mother said it's not good if you crack fingers like this. She is wrong, Prabhupada said. It is good. It gets the air out. But because he was so jovial all of a sudden with me that he saw I was afraid to hurt him, and out of love I didn't wish to do this. And then he didn't. He let it pass. He could understand. I loved him very much and didn't want to hurt him. And so I did. And because I was brainwashed by my German mother. So what to do? I couldn't follow this. And he let it go. Then I thought, oh, I wish Prabhupada will allow me to massage his lotus feet, because I know when you touch the lotus feet of a pure devotee, and so on and so forth. But I think he will never do it, because I'm too foolish. I can't even crack his fingers. Then, as if Prabhupada, again he read my mind, and all of a sudden he made like, well, this is actually uncultured if I throw my foot in your direction, but he just threw his foot with his leg, of course, in my lap, and then I said, thank you. And immediately I did. And at this moment, again, Prabhupada did what he did in his first encounter. All of a sudden, the room turned different. There was an entirely different atmosphere. Something which all the disciples, which you asked, will confirm to you. In his presence, there was just so much, I mean, Krishna was really in his heart. And wherever there is Krishna, there cannot be any Maya. And you felt like this in his presence. Your Maya was gone, and it was also a feeling of light. But not just this type of light. It was more a light which would go in the heart and make you almost feel like very moved. It was really not a physical light. It was the enlightenment. It was the brilliance of a devotee, of a pure devotee who carries Krishna in his heart, like it's described about Yashoda, Devaki, sorry, when Krishna was in her womb, everyone who came to see her saw this effulgence around her. No, you have read for sure. So that we felt with Prabhupada, although sometimes it was covered, he didn't let it out, but sometimes he just let it out, and I guess he let it out when he wanted to show mercy or so. It's also said about Srimati Radharani, when she is very, very elated in her association with Krishna, she becomes more brilliant than gold, molten gold. So at times this manifests, and in Prabhupada I saw this twice for sure, and it's because, you know, We all need certain, we accept certain things as convincing. And this, amongst others, was very, very convincing that he is really a Vaikuntha person. I would like to end now, because I can imagine that you, who have met Srila Prabhupada's disciples, but who have seen him maybe in videos and who have read his books, that you would like to also feel his effect in your life, that all your maya goes, or inner darkness, that you know exactly what to do, that you can surrender more with ease, that you can, and so on and so forth. And I would like to say just one very nice method, which was today explained by one of the devotees, and I believe it was Bhujan Prabhu, or I don't know for sure, but a method how you can feel Prabhupada's presence acting in your life and uplifting and influencing you. Is this an interesting subject for you, or is it a little boring? Good. To be more precise, because I want to now tune you a little bit philosophically. Isn't it that all of us want to find our place in life? Don't we all dream to be connected with an unending source of inspiration, so that our surrender is not just theoretical but practical? Don't we all want to know? Many of us, I feel, are like light bulbs who have not yet connected with the faucet, you know, the thing. But the moment we become connected, the moment we are spiritually in our place, wow, we are like a light bulb which is no longer cold and no light, but the light shines forth from us. This is a human need, especially amongst devotees and spiritually minded people. So here comes a tip how to be connected with Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. My dear devotees, how to find your place really, and in this way be connected. My dear devotees, please read more in Srila Prabhupada's books and try to find these places in Prabhupada's books which seem to speak to you, where you feel, wow, good point, this stuck to me. And the more you do this, you can also do this by listening to his lectures, there will be things which stuck to you and which arise you and which tell you then what you should do. I wanted to give an example. I came once out of a hospital where I almost had died. The doctor had come and said, this is either the night where you die or the night where you have your crisis and your turn in your treatment. It was a very, I survived, as you can see. But I needed to go into the mountains and walk every day, because it was a surgery on the legs and in the stomach, and I needed to just get my strength back. And I was very disheartened because I couldn't preach and I felt extremely weak. I needed two sticks to keep myself up and I sometimes stumbled and fell nevertheless. And I was really... Oh. And I had the habit to listen to a recorded lecture while I would do this walking exercise. And one day, I was just walking through the fog. I heard Prabhupada's voice, "What do you do for eternity?" I said, "A moment, did I hear correctly?" So I rewinded it back. "What do you do for eternity?" I heard it the third time, and they said, "I'm only taking care of my physical body. I will now do something for eternity." And my life changed, and afterwards I was I became again very healthy. This is my point I want to share with you. Listen to Prabhupada, and you will feel that some words, some sentences impact you very strongly and then make steps in this direction. And I can guarantee you, if you try to come closer to Prabhupada by either reading or listening or hearing about his example, you will become moved in your heart, and where there was unclarity, clarity will come. Where there was emptiness, fullness will come in your heart, and you will get a vision by which you can live. Could you understand? Thank you very, very much. Please do this. Prabhupada is not dead. Prabhupada is not gone. Such a personality cannot die. It's not possible. And because he is very merciful to those who enter the society of Krishna consciousness and who try to serve him, he will find a way to make himself known to you and to give you the strength also which you require in order to move forward and come to the right place in your life. Please take note of this. Don't forget it. Discuss it maybe with your friends, how you can first of all become more closer and then more Prabhupada consciousness. There's a man in the loudspeaker. And then allow yourself to be molded by Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, your mind will mold you. And that's miserable. So please allow his transcendental influence in your life, and it will work. I think you all know that this is true because you all joined Krishna consciousness, because you read books, or you were convinced by Srila, by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and you felt him. But now please increase your contact with Srila Prabhupada. Take this as an inspiration from Braj, and then it will be very good for you. So I want to say something which will bring me into trouble now. I want to say one thing. I'm extremely, extremely, extremely moved to see the tremendous surrender of one disciple of Srila Prabhupada. I'm speaking of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, who will most probably look angry now at me. Therefore, I don't look in his direction. I'm so moved by his dedicated service, years of dedicated service, where he has become such a good medium to let his exalted spiritual master Srila Prabhupada move through him and guide all of you. It is inconceivable. 4,000 practicing devotees who are doing this yatra, and so many devotees who join, and so many projects. And I want to congratulate you. You are at a very, very nice connection point with Srila Prabhupada, to Srila Prabhupada, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. Please, Maharaj, excuse me. I know you don't like that I do this, but what can I do? I'm still your rebellious little brother. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Goni Thai ki jai, Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. Hare Krishna.
The deepest gratitude to His Holiness Radhanath Swami, who is my life and soul, to all of His followers, of whom I am the servant, to all the devotees present here tonight, exalted God brothers. This tirobhav, or disappearance of Srila Prabhupada, is something that is an ongoing realization for those who are dependent on the great teacher, the acharya, the spiritual master. Really, when Srila Prabhupada left this world, I had no idea what it meant. It was hard to put into context. However, over the years, as the gravity of his leaving this world became manifest more and more by him being conspicuous by his absence and by the way in which we found ourselves, that is, we, the disciples who were left behind, looking for balance and a way to follow his instructions in a meaningful way. Srila Prabhupada speaks about this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how when the spiritual master leaves this world, the disciple should cry. And also, the disciple should feel that he or she must dedicate his or her life to the order of the spiritual master in his absence, in order to sustain life. After Srila Prabhupada left, I heard a story about a couple of God brothers who had been traveling in Malaysia with the library party. It was a party of devotees who would go to universities and libraries all over the world and place full sets of Srila Prabhupada's books. And Vyasaki Prabhu and Satyanarayan Prabhu travel all over the world, distribute Srila Prabhupada's books to university professors. And right around the time that Prabhupada left, they were in Malaysia. And Vyasaki had gone to visit a professor. And there, not knowing that Prabhupada had left the planet, just that very day, he met the professor, who somehow or other knew, and he heard it from him. And he was dumbfounded. It's hard to know, as I said, what to do when the spiritual master leaves. That's why Prabhupada gives instructions in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He came home, back to the motel that they were staying in as they were traveling. And he walked in the door and his traveling partner, Satyanarayan Prabhu, was shaving at the sink. And Vyasaki said that when he opened the door, he told Satyanarayan Prabhu that Srila Prabhupada had just left the planet. And he said that as soon as Satyanarayan heard those words, he crumbled, he fell in a heap on the floor and began weeping, sobbing uncontrollably. And I remember how Vyasaki said, when I saw that, I wished that I could also cry like that. And it really struck me, the two responses to Srila Prabhupada's leaving this world. I was in New York City when Prabhupada left, living in 340 West 55th, the skyscraper building Prabhupada had purchased. And I was on Sankirtan. We came home and found out when we got back to the temple, and there was kirtan all night long. The next day, the devotees were emotionally exhausted, and my godbrother Pragosh, who was my partner, or I was his partner, in going out to distribute books, came to get me and told me that today of all days, we have to go out to distribute books. That was our service. So we pulled ourselves together and we drove in our car out to the LaGuardia Airport where we used to distribute books. And both of us felt stunned. And we were reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita on the way there. I didn't know how to react. And we were walking down the long hallway to where we distributed books in the airport. And I went up the escalator to where I would usually stand to meet people coming to and from flights. And as soon as I stepped onto the square, the area where I normally would distribute, I felt instantaneous connection. It was the feeling that although Srila Prabhupada has left this world, no matter what, my service will go on. When I put my foot on that floor, which was representative of the fact that I was going to keep moving forward, I felt more connected to Srila Prabhupada in that moment than I ever had before. It reminded me also of a story that another godbrother had told me, Shureshwara Prabhu, how he had always been wanting to go in morning walks with Srila Prabhupada to get closer to him. And this was a great ambition of the devotees. Oftentimes, it was hard to get close to Prabhupada because there were leaders who needed to be close to him and not everyone could go everywhere with him. But he got to go on a morning walk and he was strategizing, trying to get closer and closer. And as he pushed his way forward in the group of devotees, he got to a point where he was very close to Prabhupada, walking right behind him, and Prabhupada stopped. And Shureshwara Prabhu says that his head or his nose came about half an inch from the back of Srila Prabhupada's head. And in that instant, when he was looking and seeing that he was about a quarter of an inch from Srila Prabhupada's transcendental head, he thought, I'm so close, but I'm so far away. And he had a realization that it's not physical proximity that gives one this closeness. Rather, as Prabhupada points out again and again, by serving the order of the spiritual master, there is a transcendental order that the acharya leaves behind very mercifully, which the Srimad Bhagavatam said is like a boat. And when one approaches that boat, to cross over the insurmountable ocean of material existence and intends to step into the boat, then the ocean of material existence shrinks to the size of the water contained within the hoofprint of a calf. The very intention to follow the transcendental order is so powerful and so sustaining and so informing that those who are left behind as disciples who embrace that order never feel themselves separated from the spiritual master. Nor do the generations after the great Acharya who find out his mood and method, and through parampara, hearing from their spiritual masters, adhere to the mood and method of the Acharya, they too are never separated. Srila Prabhupada's mood was extraordinary. He heard the crying of the people of the world, and he came running to save them at all costs. This was his motivation. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam that somewhere in this universe there is an ocean of tears, and it's an accumulation of the crying of every living entity. Those whose hearts are softened by the process of chanting Hare Krishna and following the footsteps of their Guru Parampara develop the sensitivity to feel the pain of other living entities. They become paradukatuki. Srila Prabhupada defined violence, the first prerequisite, or I should say, the prerequisite for advancing in spiritual life, ahimsa, very differently than many people do. He said, violence means to not distribute Krishna consciousness when you have it and you know that other people need it. So we've been given a very powerful mandate when Prabhupada said, kindly help me. He gave many indications of how to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and he said, kindly help me. So anyone who has the desire to connect to Srila Prabhupada can simply take up that request as their life and soul and do something practical to come closer to help Srila Prabhupada in his mission to spread it all over the world. And also to adhere to the process of hearing and chanting very strictly, strict, serious, and sincere sadhana. And for such a person going through the various phases of his or her life, under the protection of that order and under the protection of following what Srila Prabhupada has given, will find that even the obstacles in life become opportunities to grow, become strong. Also, those who take up as their life and soul the process of distributing the medicine, Nahiya Shodhi Maya Nashi Bharo Lagi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I've brought the medicine and he wanted us to distribute it. Those who become bhaktas without borders, they become selfless in distributing that medicine to as many people as possible, will become enlivened day after day by being in the flow of that mercy that's coming down from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Srila Prabhupada, and will see for themselves great miracles. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made no discrimination who was a fit or unfit candidate and simply widely distributed the holy name to everyone wherever he went. And he asked his followers to do the same thing, and Srila Prabhupada followed in the same mood. Recently, when I was in Southern California, going door to door to distribute books to people in their apartments, I came to a house in which a Gujarati couple lived, and they told me, after looking at the Bhagavatam, "These are just stories. We've heard these before. We're not interested." And I went downstairs to another apartment, and I knocked on the door, and there were four young Muslim men, students from Bahrain, and they were smoking cigarettes and eating chicken. And they saw me at the door dressed in my dhoti, and they said, "Come in." And I sat down with them at the table, and I began to show them the Bhagavad Gita and explain what it was about. I told them about the verse, "Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja," how if one surrenders to God, one's life becomes productive and happy. And they lit up. They thought that was the best thing they ever heard since they've come to America. And each one of them purchased a Bhagavad Gita for $20. They're very wealthy in Bahrain. And I was in that activity feeling Prabhupada's presence, how he went door to door, how he started in such a simple way to follow the order of his spiritual master. One sheet newspaper he made. The other night, Gargamuni Prabhu was speaking in Vrindavan, and he showed one of the original newspapers that Srila Prabhupada had produced, and he held it up. It was one sheet. And then we were in Prabhupada's room, so all the books from around the world in different languages are now displayed in those beautiful cases in his room. And Gargamuni Prabhu said, "How did he get from this to all this?" And it's practically a miracle. Because if anyone's tried to write a book, he or she knows that it's practically impossible. Many people try to write a book, many people are still writing a book, but hardly anybody finishes a book because it's practically impossible to write a book and get it published. Very difficult. What to speak of a pamphlet or a newspaper, it's all very difficult. But Prabhupada wrote and published dozens and dozens of books, all while he was managing an international organization. And that is a miracle that happened. And the miracle happened because he adhered to the simple order of his spiritual master. And so this Tirubhav festival is an opportunity to remember the great opportunity before us, which is to find out what is the order of the Acharya, how it comes down to us through our spiritual masters, and simply to embrace it within our hearts. And even if we're not able to yet fully take advantage of that order, as Srila Prabhupada was not fully able to take advantage of the order of his spiritual master in the first part of his life. And in one lecture, Prabhupada remembers that and therefore gives this realization to all of us. When he says that practically if you receive the order of the spiritual master but you can't fulfill it immediately, you may pray, "How can I do? How can I do? How can I do?" Again and again praying, "Let me please execute this order of my spiritual master." In that way, he said, all the powers of the internal potency will come to bear within the heart of such a person who develops that desire to fulfill the order of the spiritual master and to follow in the footsteps of the Acharya. and all success will be there. On this day of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, here with all of you who have been sent by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to cover the earth with the holy names. That's why you're here, by the way. Been chosen by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to push on this inundation, which is a word Prabhupada used frequently when I was interviewing some of the devotees about the early book distribution. Yogeshwar Prabhu told me that he had translated a book into French, and he took it to Prabhupada and he showed it to him. Prabhupada looked at it on the front and back, and he said one word: inundate. So we are meant to inundate our hearts with the process of chanting Hare Krishna by giving our full attention to our chanting of japa, of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and then giving back to the world with compassion the medicine that's been given to us. And in those two activities, we can attain all perfection following this great movement established by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, authorized by the order spoken from the lotus mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gaur Premanande Haribo Vancha Kalpadarubhascha Krupasannabhayevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. And now I would like to invite His Holiness Chandramouli Swami Maharaj.
Srila Prabhupada ki. As I was listening to my esteemed and exalted godbrothers speak, my mind was going through so many thoughts on what can I say that would actually really illustrate what Srila Prabhupada has given us and who Srila Prabhupada is. My mind drifted back to the time of the actual day of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance on November 14, 1977, when I heard His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj sing the song tonight of the separation for the departed Vaishnavas. And I remember on that day I was in New Vrindavan, and Radhanath Maharaj was also there. And when I heard the news, I felt a sense of loss. I think, like Vaisheshika said, that we couldn't really process or really understand how to understand Srila Prabhupada's departure. The only way I could actually express that was we felt like little children who had lost their father, who we didn't know really so much about or really how to serve. And I remember Radhanath Maharaj also on that day in the Prasadam room in New Vrindavan sang that song to all of us, and we were all in such sadness and such a sense of loss that here, and we were hearing constantly Prabhupada in Vrindavan, how his body was apparently deteriorating and how he could leave at any time. But when it actually happened, it was still a great shock. It was like a devastation. There was a sense of loss and a sense of, what do we do now? And I was hearing also some of my God brothers and others, God sisters, were also feeling like, how can we go on without Srila Prabhupada? He is our life. He is our inspiration. He is everything. And now there was this Srila Prabhupada was gone, what should we do? Or how should we act? How should we process his disappearance? What is our relationship with him? And I felt this sense of trying to find, where do I belong now? What is my relationship to Prabhupada? I had only seen him two or three times, being in the New Vrindavan community. I joined in 1973. Prabhupada came in 74 for a festival with many of the senior devotees. And I just got to see him once from a distance. And that was my only contact on that particular visit. In 1975, a small group of us, about 15 or 20 of us, we left New Vrindavan in a van to see Srila Prabhupada in New York. Prabhupada was in the Brooklyn Temple. And that was my first real connection with Srila Prabhupada. I actually sat and listened to his classes. And we went on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. And of course, many of the senior devotees who were very close to Prabhupada. And I was always way in the back. And I could hardly hear what was going on. But just being on the walk, I felt some connected with Srila Prabhupada. And then in 1976, Prabhupada came again to New Vrindavan, and he stayed for about a week and gave many, many lectures. And I got a chance to cook for Srila Prabhupada. I made some sweets and was given to him. And Prabhupada, the word got back, he liked them. So when I really look at my personal experiences with Srila Prabhupada, I can see they were quite insignificant and very, very few. So when Prabhupada left, I felt this real sense of loss. But then, by the support of my godbrothers and others who were preaching that actually the spiritual master never leaves. He leaves in order to, somehow or other, he leaves for many reasons, but he leaves in order to increase our attachment to him in the mood of separation. And what does he leave behind? He leaves his instructions. And then where do we find his instructions? In his lectures and in his books. So then I started to read more and more Srila Prabhupada's books, trying to find more of my connection with Prabhupada through the books. And then I heard one statement. One devotee had asked Prabhupada while he was still personally present, how can we associate with you once you leave the planet? What will be our means for connection? And Prabhupada said, I'm in my books. You read my books. I had an interesting experience. I had heard this statement, and I understood theoretically, but without realization, yes, Prabhupada is in his books, because his words echo the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that's our connection with Krishna through the words of the spiritual master, through the direction of, that we can take this philosophy and apply it into our lives and understand our relationship with Krishna. And one time, I think it was many years later, I was sitting in the Chicago temple and I was reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and I was reading and reading and reading for a long time. And then at one time, I don't want to sound like I'm special, but this experience for me was very, very special. That while I was reading the books, all of a sudden, something really mystical happened. I was no longer reading the words, but I was hearing Prabhupada's voice speak the words as I was reading. And it was like listening to Prabhupada's recorded lecture. His words, his voice was coming through his words as I was reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then I said, yes, Prabhupada is in his books. He wants to tell me. He wants to show me through my own experience. I'm there. Just read my books. And Prabhupada wanted us to read his books. He made that one of his most important instructions to his devotees. We were very enthusiastic as a society to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, and that's what he wanted. He wanted this knowledge to go into as many places, as many countries, to reach as many persons as possible with this knowledge, knowing that this knowledge is the only way that people will understand their relationship with Krishna. That knowledge is the philosophy of our relationship with Krishna and the application of that knowledge in practice. But he would always say, you're distributing my books, but you're not reading them. In 1976, in Mayapur, he gave a very poignant lecture about this. And Prabhupada wanted to make the point clear that I have made part of my mission to bring this knowledge to the world. And this knowledge is the connection between the understanding of what is real and what is illusion. And that's what I liked about Prabhupada's books. He not only told us about Krishna, he not only told us about the process of pure devotional service, but he showed us and taught us and completely clarified what is our relationship with this material world and how to understand that relationship in terms of the reality of our existence in spiritual essence. And I would love to hear Prabhupada do that. And Prabhupada, he gave us not only the knowledge, the application, the understanding, and he was always there to bring us back when we got off. He was like a father, like a mother, like a manager. He did everything for his devotees because he knew that if I could make one pure devotee, then my mission is successful. And he said that many times, but he also said, somehow or other, I have many pure devotees. And Prabhupada was very, very pleased to see how many of his disciples seriously take up what he had given him. And we want to please Srila Prabhupada, as Vaisheshika Prabhu was mentioning. How do we please the spiritual master? That is our connection with Krishna through Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada is giving us Krishna. And what is that gift? When Prabhupada first began the movement in 1965, he got a little storefront in 26th Second Avenue, which is for me a little curio shop. And the persons who were coming at that time were just, as we know, persons who were coming off the streets, somehow just saw the little storefront, got a little flyer, had no knowledge of Krishna consciousness, were interested in something spiritual, searching, and somehow came. And after a while, they became a little enthusiastic to assist Srila Prabhupada in turning that 26th Second Avenue into the first temple. So the former name of the temple, of that little storefront, was the Matchless Gift. It was a little curio shop that sold different kinds of knickknacks and various other unusual and interesting things. And when they were renovating the storefront and fixing it and painting it, they wanted to take the sign down. And Prabhupada understood that. He said, no, you leave that sign up. This is actually what we're giving, the matchless gift, that gift that cannot be matched, Krishna consciousness, devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What did Prabhupada come to give us? He came to give us Krishna. In 1975, Prabhupada came to Atlanta, Georgia, and devotees from practically different places around the country came to see Prabhupada. Many of them were book distribution parties. I remember I was in New Vrindavan, I wanted to go, but somehow or other my service wouldn't allow me to leave, and I was feeling very unhappy. But later on I heard many of the lectures that Srila Prabhupada gave there, and I remember one very clearly. The temple was packed. Devotees had come from various places around America to see Srila Prabhupada, and the temple was so full that there were devotees standing outside the window trying to hear Srila Prabhupada. It wasn't a very big temple, but it wasn't small either. And Prabhupada was asked a question. After giving a very, very powerful lesson, he was asked the question. And the question was, Srila Prabhupada, what pleases you most? Now, there was somewhat of an indication that Prabhupada was going to say, distribute my books. Because many of the devotees there were book distributors. And the enthusiasm within the temple was so energetic because these devotees were so fired up by distributing Srila Prabhupada's book. It was like you could feel that, as the devotees describe it, you could feel the atmosphere. But Prabhupada answered in a different way. He said, what pleases the spiritual master most is if you love Krishna. Srila Prabhupada came to teach us who is Krishna, what is our relationship with Krishna, and how to successfully develop that relationship in love of God. So, we speak many things about what pleases Srila Prabhupada, but that's the goal of everything that this society is about, developing our love for Krishna. And Prabhupada gave us that process of loving Krishna through his books, through worship of the deity, the transcendental Archivigraha form of the Lord, establishing temples all over the world of Radha and Krishna worship. Never before such glorious and opulent worship of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna throughout the whole world. So many temples. Where is there another society that has developed such elaborate and very, what we say, shastric deity worship? Srila Prabhupada performed a miracle in establishing these temples, and these temples are still proliferating by Srila Prabhupada's mercy and by the devotees who are surrendering completely to Srila Prabhupada's desire. And of course his books and the chanting of the holy name, but all this culminates in trying to develop our love for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada knew, he said, I'm an old man. This was towards the beginning of the movement, 1970, 1971, 72. He said, I'm an old man, I could leave at any time. So please take this movement seriously. Change your life, become Krishna conscious. So he did one thing, which was somewhat prophetic, knowing that he may not be here to give us the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So he gave us Krishna book. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the beautiful 10th canto, and Prabhupada spoke the verses and gave his explanations. Because he knew, or he may have understood, that I may not be here long enough to complete Srimad Bhagavatam. And so he gave us the Krishna book. And it was interesting that he did, not interesting, but it was somewhat, Prabhupada knew, he left only completing 13 chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But he wanted us, and as Vaisheshika Prabhu mentioned, he wanted us to read these books, he wanted us to understand these books, and he wanted us to give this knowledge to others. He lives for one who lives to fulfill the desires of the spiritual master. So Srila Prabhupada is just asking us two things: become Krishna conscious and distribute that mercy to others. And as Vaisheshika Prabhu mentioned, we all have some understanding. We all have some little bit of knowledge. We all have something we can offer to Srila Prabhupada in the way of giving Krishna consciousness to others. And the more we read Srila Prabhupada's books, the more we associate with his devotees, and the more we come together as a society to help each other, remind each other of what Srila Prabhupada gave us, and at the same time try to serve his mission, then we can feel the presence of Prabhupada. He reasons ill, let's say, that Vaishnavas die. When thou art living still and sound, Vaishnavas die to live, and in living spread the holy name around. So yes, Srila Prabhupada has disappeared in his physical presence. And that's a great loss. Sometimes I think what it would be like if Srila Prabhupada was still here today. My mind imagines so many wonderful things that would be happening, and how our hearts would be just inundated by his presence and his instructions. But then I also think he is still here. He's here in his devotees. He's here in his books. He's here in everything he gave us. So if we can remember the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and take them to heart, we can still associate with Prabhupada. Prabhupada is not gone. He is simply available through his devotees, through his books, and especially when we come together and chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.